It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
When the president says he's going to close the border, that is a totally unrealistic boast on his part.
It certainly isn't a bluff. You can take the president seriously.
By anyone's definition, by any measure, right now we have a crisis at our southern border.
Why are we talking about closing the border? Because not for spite and not to try and undo what's happening, but to simply say, look, we need the people from the ports of entry to go out and patrol in the desert where we don't have any wall. We hate to say we told you so, but we told you so.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. That was Fox last night, a montage before the panel on Special Report. And the first voice you heard was Senator Dick Durbin. The president is just bluffing on shutting down the border. And you heard Kellyanne Conway say, no, he's serious. You can take him seriously. And you hear Jay Johnson, who was the Homeland Security Director under Barack Obama, agreeing we have a crisis on the border. That's pretty shocking. And then Mick Mulvaney, the current chief of staff for President Trump, talking about, we told you what was the problem, we told you, and now this is what's happening. And so if that's not enough, we have the acting ICE director, John Vitiello, talking about the border. He's been speaking out on it. Let's listen to what he said yesterday.
It's terrible. We're facing an unprecedented, unmitigated crisis on the southwest border. It's unprecedented territory we're in. You know, thousands of people coming to the border every single 24 hours,
right.
And not enough capacity in any of the systems designed to enforce the law and to protect people at the border. There's not enough resources in any of these categories. It's absolutely a crisis down there. We need to patrol that border. We need to have an immigration system that has integrity. And right now, every part of the system is overwhelmed.
You know, interestingly, this morning I heard that there are two names being sort of tossed around as a possible border czar, that the president's talking about appointing a border czar. One of them was our guest yesterday, Ken Cuccinelli, former Attorney General of Virginia, and then the other was Kris Kobach, the former Secretary of State of Kansas, who was our guest recently as well. Both those guys are great, and I wish they would turn it over to someone like them and let them really take control and turn them loose and let them do what needs to be done. And by the way, I had not heard. Did you, any of you, especially in Oklahoma, hear the story of Paige Gomer? Paige is the mother of I don't know how many children, but she's the mother of children. And she was murdered last week in Canadian County, Oklahoma, which, by the way, I've never heard of before, Canadian County. Here's the story. According to a statement from ICE, Ontiveros, Ramon Hector Martin Ontiveros, 33 years old, illegal immigrant from Mexico, has been caught in the country illegally on 5 separate occasions between 2007 and 2013. The first 3 times he was encountered between March 2007 and April 2011, he was voluntarily returned to Mexico. Fourth time he was caught was October 2012. After that encounter, he was removed on an expedited removal order the next day. Finally, he was caught a 5th time, December 2012, and was criminally charged and convicted of illegal entry. But he didn't serve any prison time. He was deported January 2013. And then now he pops up having murdered Paige Gomer, mother of however many children, in Canadian County, Oklahoma. This is the thing. As we've said many, many times, I actually think these stories should be our headlines, even more than, you know, though it's not bad enough to see thousands of people crossing our borders illegally and how threatening that is. But the headline should be about Americans that are being killed or maimed or raped. You fill in the blanks. By illegal immigrants who've been deported multiple times or encountered multiple times and never brought to justice, never incarcerated. And it's just, it's getting epidemic and it's very frustrating. John Roberts did a report last night. We should listen to this. John talks about the potential of President Trump closing the border and shutting off aid to three of the countries in Central America. Let's listen.
Administration officials tell Fox News President Trump is serious about closing the border and that he could do it as early as this week unless something dramatic changes.
Why are we talking about closing the border? We need the people from the ports of entry to go out and patrol in the desert where we don't have any wall. We hate to say we told you so, but we told you so.
In a statement this morning, DHS Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen said as many as 750 Customs and Border Protection officers would be immediately reallocated to Border Patrol duties, adding that number may top 2,000 in the coming weeks. She also ordered CBP to send hundreds more people back to Mexico every day to wait out their asylum claims.
President Trump is working to set the conditions so that we can keep our country safe, secure, and sovereign.
In an attempt to put pressure on so-called Northern Triangle countries to stop the massive exodus of migrants, President Trump intends to cut off aid to Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. The move drew howls of criticism from Democrats who have refused to give the president money to build a barrier on the southern border.
Three countries are dissembling before our eyes, and people are desperately coming to the United States. The president's cutting off aid to these countries will not solve that problem.
While official figures won't be out until next week, DHS says illegal immigration is at a 12-year high. Democrats have maintained there is no crisis on the border, that the president is making it up. And while they still disagree on the approach, they do seem to be changing their tune.
Look, here is the story. You have a terrible humanitarian crisis.
Administration sources say there are hopeful signs from Mexico. The Mexican government has told the U.S. it will put up more checkpoints in the narrow part of southern Mexico. Anyone who crosses that area without papers to enter the United States will be deported. But the White House says it's only a start.
All right, so that's John Roberts on Fox. I have to say, you know, I hammer on John all the time because he is obviously a product of mainstream media thinking. He is one of them, as far as I'm concerned. And generally speaking, he couches his reports with mockery or criticism of the president. It sounds like John Roberts may actually begin to believe now that there is a crisis at the border. Good for him. To change the subject a little bit, we did not discuss yesterday. We talked quite a bit about Jussie Smollett in Chicago and his fakery, his construction of a crime, the ridiculous the fact that he got off, the charges were dismissed, all 16 charges. And there's more to say about the legal part of that. But I did not say yesterday that Jussie was up for an award at the NAACP Image Awards. And Chris Rock was the host. You may have already seen this, but it's worth a listen because Chris Rock, of course, black, funny comedian that he is, was pretty bold in how he regarded Jussie Smollett. Let's listen.
I guess I got to present an award that said no Jussie Smollett jokes. Yeah, I know. What a waste of light skin, you know? You know what I could do with that light skin? That curly hair, my career would be out of here. Running Hollywood. Yes, no, just did. What was he thinking? From now on, I ain't never gonna know just, you're Jussie from now on. You don't even get the you no more. That you was respect. You ain't getting no respect from me.
Yeah, so interesting. You ain't getting no respect from me. The other thing you heard him talk about, this is a primarily black audience. It is the NAACP Image Awards, after all, National Association of Colored People. You heard them laughing about Chris's remark about that's a waste of light skin. And I just have to comment on that. This is something that some of you may not realize. A lot of you that are black certainly know what I'm talking about, that within the black community, skin tone is highly regarded. You know, if you're the lighter you are from their perspective, the better off you are. The darker you are, you can often be shunned in the black community. Isn't that ironic? It really is ironic. And it's something that's handed down to us, I'm sure, from you know, from the slavery days when black Africans off the boat were the lowest caste. And then as there was intermarriage and people got lighter, they got more privilege. And that still is the case in black communities. I think it's stunning, but it's true. According to Chris Rock, it's true. You know, he says, if I could, I wouldn't wait. That's a waste of light skin. I could be running Hollywood if I had that light skin. I just think that's really interesting. That's not the point of me playing the clip, but it is worth noting that, you know, prejudice is kind of a human sin that we all have in various ways, whether it's a different sports team or a different color, different race, different kind of hair. We are hard on each other. And I don't think, you know, it knows any bounds. But interestingly enough, the Empire ratings have collapsed after the criminal charges were dropped against Jussie Smollett. So even though it seems like the Empire show was welcoming him back, they received 3.97 million viewers overall on Wednesday night, and their average is 10. And that was after the charges were dropped. So that isn't that interesting? It seems like just people, maybe like Chris Rock, if you think, oh, I think that a lot of white people assume that black people are going to embrace other black people no matter what. And that sometimes is true, and it's true in reverse also. But I just don't think that we're seeing that. I think there are a lot of really fine people who have a sense of honor and decency. It has nothing to do with color, but in the black community, there are many of them, and I think they're not having it. They're just not having it. So, but there were demonstrations in Chicago yesterday. Matt Finn on Fox talked about it. Let's listen.
Demonstrators getting in each other's faces outside of Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox's downtown office. Police are protesting Fox for what they call a history of being anti-police and demanding she resign after dropping the charges against Smollett. Jesse Jackson led his group of counter-protesters into the middle of the police demonstration. Jackson tells Fox News Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson's conclusion that Smollett committed a hoax is not true.
You think Eddie Johnson's wrong here?
Very wrong.
Fox supporters say she is reforming criminal justice and Smollett as a cover for political attacks.
But take your hands off her.
Kim Fox continues to defend her office's decision to drop Smollett's case, writing in the Chicago Tribune, quote, "Since it seems politically expedient right now to question my motives and actions and those of my office, let me state publicly and clearly that I welcome an outside, non-political review of how we handle this matter." The police union fired back, writing, "The CPD concluded after an exhaustive investigation that Mr. Smollett faked a hate crime. It is Mrs. Fox's duty to prosecute this crime. She refused to do so."
Live from the Dolby Theater in
Over the weekend at the NAACP Image Awards, Smollett was nominated but lost in the Best Supporting Actor category. He did not attend the awards, but that didn't stop comedian Chris Rock from poking fun at Smollett.
What was he thinking?
And today, former Illinois appellate justice Sheila O'Brien wrote in an op-ed that she is personally going to petition the courts here to assign a special prosecutor to investigate Kim Fox.
Well, that story's not going to be over. I mean, I know Chicago has a terrible reputation, and deservedly so. But the untold story is that there's a lot of wonderful people in Chicago of all races. I would know. That was my home for many, many years. Talk radio, 3-hour drive time for 10 years there. Broad audience, talk to just all kinds of people. There's such good people there. Lots of Christians. Moody Bible Institute is located there. Moody Radio is, that's the home base for that. And lots of churches, lots of fine people, lots of black Christians, many of them who are friends of mine. So I'm just telling you, it has a bad rap, but it's got some great people. So we're going to see what happens there. By the way, isn't it ironic? Jesse Jackson is in that crowd, you know, protesting on behalf of Smollett when Smollett, you know, spent his community service time. So says Kim Fox, the prosecutor who didn't prosecute. They put Smollett with Operation Rainbow Push. Jesse Jackson's organization to do his community service work. I think he coached them in the radio studio. He talked to people as they came through the building. That was his community service. And so Jesse Jackson's very grateful. So now he's defending Jussie Smollett. Poor Jussie. Be right back after this. Sandy Rios.
80% of the time, an abortion-minded mother who views an ultrasound or sonogram of her baby will choose life. Here's the story of Candace.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
There are currently preborn centers which do not have an ultrasound machine. Would you sponsor a machine today? Dial pound 250 and say keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
The movie Unplanned is the story of Abby Johnson, a former abortion center director who became a pro-life activist after witnessing an abortion for the first time herself. Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association, and you need to go see this movie, Unplanned. We've screened that here at American Family Association and American Family Radio. It is one of the most powerful films I've ever seen, and especially having to do with the pro-life issue. This was a woman who was very steeped in Planned Parenthood, and then she turned around, and God showed her what she was being a part of, and she left that and now speaks out on behalf of life. So it's a great story. It's a true story, and it's a movie that you want to go see, so make plans to do so.
Unplanned, now playing in select theaters nationwide. Not suitable for younger viewers.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
A wing-ding showdown in Buffalo. That story next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TME. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TME. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There's a big chicken fight at the Buffalo Niagara International Airport, and it does not have a thing to do with wings. It's about Chick-fil-A. Their new franchise was revoked one day after it was announced. New York Assemblyman Sean Ryan, a Democrat, had raised issues over the company's religious values. He accused Chick-fil-A of supporting anti-gay organizations, a flat-out lie. Just because a group supports traditional marriage does not make them anti-gay. But the truth does not matter to lawmakers like Sean Ryan. Same thing happened in San Antonio, where the city council said Chick-fil-A had a legacy of anti-gay behavior. It's mighty clear to me that a militant mob of anti-Christian bigots wants to shut down every Christian-owned business in America. They want you to renounce your faith and follow their godless agenda, and we must fight back, folks, with a righteous ferocity. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I resent you calling me a denier. That is a word meant to put me down. I'm a skeptic about climate change, and I want to make it darn clear, Mr. Kenny's not a scientist. I am. He's the CEO of the Weather Channel now. I was the founder of the Weather Channel, not the co-founder.
And I'm glad you did, because I am addicted to the Weather Channel. I watch a lot of cable news.
Now, hold on just a minute. I'm not done. And CNN has taken a very strong position on global warming that it is a consensus. Well, there is no consensus in science. Science isn't a vote. Science is about facts. And if you get down to the hard, cold facts, there's no question about it. Climate change is not happening. There is no significant man-made global warming now. There hasn't been any in the past, and there's no reason to expect any in the future. There's a whole lot of baloney, and yes, it has become a big political point of the Democratic Party and part of their platform, and I regret it's become political instead of scientific, but the science is on my side.
Okay, that's the voice of John Coleman. I was talking about Chicago. I actually did not grow up in Chicago, but I was young with my children young when I moved there and raised them there, lived there for 20 years, and John Coleman was our weatherman. And you can see that he spoke with great authority because he was a scientist. Founder of the Weather Channel, and that's him being interviewed by Brian Stelter on CNN. But John Coleman is not done. This is what's so funny. I love it. I mean, this is the kind of no-nonsense spunk we should have every day. I think that's why people like Trump, whether, you know, they don't like the crassness, but they like his no-nonsense approach. So are you kidding me? That kind of you kidding me approach? Here's John Coleman with the second part.
I don't think we're going to come to a conclusion about the topic right here. What I do wonder, well, though, is when you see...
I know we're not, because you wouldn't allow it to happen on CNN, but I'm happy that I got on the air and got a chance to talk to your viewers. Hello, everybody. There is no global warming.
What I do wonder is when you see the government, when you see NASA, when you see other institutions say that 97% of climate scientists agree... Do you think they're making it up? What I don't understand is how you square that.
Well, that's a manipulated figure, and let me explain it to you. Government puts out about $2.5 billion directly for climate research every year. It only gives that money to scientists who will produce scientific results that support the global warming hypothesis of the Democrat Party of position. So they don't have any choice. If you're going to get the money, you got to support their position. Therefore, 97% of the scientific reports published support global warming. Why? Because those are the ones the government pays for, and that's where the money is. It's real simple. But that doesn't mean it's right. That doesn't make it true. That only makes it bought and paid for. The money goes in circles.
I'm not a scientist, so I'm not going to try to refute you
Boy,
on
that's
the facts.
The truth.
I'll simply
so
say that the vast majority...
Please stand back from this issue and let the two sides be on the air. There are 31,000 scientists who have signed a petition that says it is not valid, that my position is correct. And we'll keep battling, and we will prevail in time.
John Coleman on CNN with Brian Stelter, a founder of the Weather Channel, John Coleman. And so not CEO, he is actually a scientist, as you heard him describe. But the scientist, Beto O'Rourke, whose resume on science and the atmosphere is legendary, had this to say.
You think about climate change, and at this point, there can be no shadow of a doubt that our own excesses and emissions and inaction politically and as a country in a democracy, where each of us comprise the government, have led to the warming that we've seen so far, 1 degree Celsius just since 1980. And along this current trajectory, the fires, the droughts, the floods, the devastation that we are witnessing right now will only become profoundly worse. And those who will bear the consequences disproportionately are the generations that follow ours. And so you've got to ask yourself, how in the world do we find ourselves in this position? And so if we are going to confront any of these challenges, whether it's challenges to the economy or a system of healthcare or public education or confronting climate change before it is too late within the 10 years that we have left to us to act, then the single greatest mechanism that humankind has ever devised to call forth the power of the people, a democracy, must be fixed.
Yeah, we only have 10 years, just so you know. And of course, the great scientist Beto O'Rourke knows better than the silly old scientist who founded the Weather Channel named John Coleman. And so, but that's the position of the Democratic Party. That's the position of a lot of people that you talk to on a daily basis because they don't know anything else. They've been propagandized on this the same as they were on Russian collusion. And so, but there is no weather change that's man-made. The weather's always been changing since the beginning, since God created the weather, and he created the earth. Weather has changed. It gets cold and gets hot. It snows and it rains and it does all of those things in between. We have ice, we have hurricanes, we have tornadoes, we have all of that stuff. And there's not a thing that a man can do to stop it or cause it. We just don't have that kind of power. You know, the Bible says, what is man that they are mindful of him? We are just a dust. We are a vapor. We come and we go. And yet the humanists among us would try to convince us that we have some effect on weather. It's just a big lie. It is a huge lie along with the others. And speaking of lies and speaking of dangerous things, Beto O'Rourke, along with the other Democratic candidates, and that's not all of them. How could you get all of them on one stage? It will be tricky. Cory Booker, Julian Castro, Beto, Amy Klobuchar, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Jay Inslee, and Kirsten Gillibrand all lined up on a stage yesterday. They were speaking at a theater in downtown D.C. And the groups in attendance were the Sierra Club, MoveOn.org, Planned Parenthood Action Fund, the SEIU, that's the communication, oh, no, SEIU is different, SEIU and the Communications Worker of America. I think there were a few others. I'll see if I can find them for you. But they were led in a cheer on the stage by Jamal Watkins. He works for, I think it is the NAACP. I'll find that out. And so I want you to hear this chant, and then I want to talk to you about what it was that they did and he was doing. Let's listen.
Good morning, family.
Good morning.
I'm going to say that again. Good morning, family.
Good morning.
My name is Jamal Watkins, and I proudly serve as the Vice President of Civic Engagement for the NAACP. I bring you greetings on behalf of our President and CEO, Derek Johnson, our Chair, Leon Russell, our Vice Chair, Karen Boykin-Towns, but more importantly, our millions of members and advocates and activists around the country who are standing for we the people in terms of fighting for democracy, advancing issues of racial justice, and making sure that we're tearing down the silos as it relates to building communities. Now, I came here not to talk at you. We're going to be here all day. It's going to be a long and powerful day. But I want you to do something with me. I'm going to actually have you participate with me in repeating some words from a leader by the name of Asada Shakur. So if you can stand up with me. If you can't stand, it's okay. But I want you to repeat after me. It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
We must love each other and respect each other.
We must love each other and respect each other.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
Now we're going to take it as loud as we can get. It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
We must love each other and respect each other. We have nothing to lose but our chains.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
We have nothing to lose but our chains. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Jamal Watkins, leading the Democratic candidates and the audience in that cheer. Now, what did he mean? Let's see. Let me think. Based on what he just said, just taking the words themselves, it is our duty to fight for freedom. I think that's true. It's our duty to fight for freedom, too. It is our duty to win. When it comes to freedom, I'd say that's true, too. We must love each other and support each other. Absolutely. I think that that's true, as long as we're not talking about criminals, as long as we're talking about those people that are actually fighting in the right way for freedom. But then we have nothing to lose but our chains. Well, I guess metaphorically that's true, too. If we're bound by, I'll speak from my perspective, politically correct speech, draconian rules, government regulations, and we think it's getting off track, we don't want to be in bondage. But wait a second. What is he actually talking about? Well, he's talking about a chant, which is a quote from Asada Shakur. Some of you may know her. She has a different name. What is her name? Asada Shakur is the name she called herself. I'll get to it in just a second. She has a name that's probably more familiar to you. Oh, Deborah Chesimard. Deborah Chesimard, what's her history? She killed a policeman in cold-blooded murder. This was in 1972, I think, and Shakur's words are in reference to someone else's words. Those words I just talked about, it is our duty to fight for freedom, it is our duty to win, we must love each other and support each other, we have nothing to lose but our chains. That's from a Karl Marx quote. You might remember that Karl Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto, which was implemented first by Stalin, Joseph Stalin, in Russia, that caused the death of at least 20 million of his own people. He was ruthless, ruthless, ruthless as he applied Karl Marx's teachings in his own country. People killed, murdered, slaughtered, amazingly. So this is what Karl Marx wrote. Let the ruling classes tremble at a communist revolution. The proletarians have nothing to lose but their chains. They have a world to win. Proletarians of all countries, unite. I want to read that to you again. This is Karl Marx. Let the ruling classes tremble at the communistic revolution. The proletarians have nothing to lose but their chains. They have a world to win. Proletarians of the countries, of all countries, unite. Workers of the world, unite. Remember that slogan from Marxist theory? And so he is absolutely channeling Marxist theory, even though the words may sound, that's what happens, you know, it happens in theology too. People that are teaching you false doctrine or want to mislead you on truth will do that by using partial truths, words that ring true, buzzwords, phrases that you're familiar with. But they'll change the context so that you really maybe at first don't know what you're talking about. You think it's pretty good, but it isn't good at all. And let me just say that Shakur, it was a former Black Panther, and you remember when I interviewed David Horowitz a couple of weeks ago, David left the radical left of the 60s because the Black Panther murdered a friend of his. He was involved with the Black Panthers. They were communists. They were murderers. They were lawless, radical Black men and women, but the men did most of the stuff, except for Joanne Chesimard, who killed a policeman. She was also a member of the Black Liberation Army. She was convicted of first-degree murder of State Trooper Werner Forster during a shootout on the New Jersey Turnpike in 1973. Between 73 and 77, the terrorist, that's Deborah, was indicted 10 times in New York and New Jersey, resulting in 7 criminal trials. She escaped from a New Jersey prison in 1979. She sought refuge in Cuba, where she was granted political asylum. And there's a $2 million reward for information leading to her arrest. You know, I remember, it seems to me, and I can't repeat this with any certainty because I didn't have a chance to look for this. It seems to me the Obamas, there was pressure on them to have her arrested when they normalized relations with Cuba. That was one of the requirements that people felt there should be, that you should return this murderer who escaped prison and fled to Cuba. She should be back in the United States, and Barack Obama refused to do that, to make that a condition. So Joanne Chesimard still is in Cuba, and you might recall that Maxine Waters in 1998 wrote a letter to Cuban President Fidel Castro talking about that she had mistakenly voted for House Concurrent Resolution 254, which called on the government of Cuba to extradite to the U.S. Joanne Chesimard and all other individuals who have fled the United States from political persecution and received political asylum in Cuba. And she writes, by the way, to apologize for signing this. I am opposed to the revolution. I unequivocally stated that a mistake was made, and I would have voted against that legislation. You know that members of the Congressional Black Caucus have been hanging out in Cuba since our relations were normalized by President Obama. And so there you go. That's where these Democratic candidates were appearing. They all chanted that. Cory Booker, Julian Castro, Amy Klobuchar, Beto O'Rourke, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Jay Inslee, and Kirsten Gillibrand. They all chanted the Marxist slogan on the stage yesterday. It is our duty to fight for freedom. It is our duty to win. We must love each other and support each other. We have nothing to lose but our chains. You might recall that week before last, I interviewed Diana West, and she traced the Marxist roots of many of the people involved in this so-called Russian collusion, from Nellie Orr to, of course, we didn't even talk about Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is a Marxist. He's not just a socialist. He's a Marxist. Bernie Sanders and his wife spent their honeymoon in Soviet Russia, in Moscow. And at the time when he got married, trust me, Americans didn't just like go have a honeymoon in Soviet Union. You did not go there unless you had some kind of, unless you were a president flying on Air Force One. Americans didn't go unless they were friendly to Soviets. Maybe if you're Billy Graham preaching, there would be an exception. But otherwise, you didn't just travel there. They were our enemies, our declared enemies. By the way, they tried to set up an attack on us in Cuba, on the island of Cuba, by bringing in missiles. Anybody remember that? But Bernie Sanders decides he'll have his honeymoon over there. You ask me, you ask yourself, where do you think he stands? You think he's not a communist Marxist? Of course he is. And many of the others are as well. More discussion of that to come. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Why will you continue to rebel? The whole head is sick and the whole heart faint. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In a September 2nd, 2016 text message exchange, Peter Strzok asked Lisa Page whether she prepared talking points for then-FBI Director James Comey. Page responded, "Yes, because POTUS wants to know everything we're doing." The POTUS in September 2016 was Barack Obama. This message indicates that Obama was intimately involved with the insurance policy Russian collusion sham investigation that started with political opposition research paid for by the FBI, the DNC, and the Clinton campaign. Looks like this criminal coup attempt reaches all the way to the 44th president of the United States.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
In a world increasingly hostile towards the Christian worldview, can meaningful relationships and dialogue be established to communicate the gospel? This week on Let My People Think, Ravi Zacharias shows us how, in Bridging Two Worlds.
Sundays at 7 p.m. Central.
Kurt Wallace here, along with the guy with the insanely deep voice, Chris Wallace.
Hello, Kurt.
Now, Chris, since we're brothers in Christ, can you teach me how to do my voice like that?
Sure. Repeat after me.
Okay, good.
Visit Urban.
Visit Urban.
Family.
Family.
Talk.
Talk.
Dot com.
Dot com.
Now say it all together.
Visit Urban. Family. No, I can't.
UrbanFamilyTalk.com.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Islamic Nation of Brunei will be implementing strict Sharia law this week. The penalty for thievery will be to have a hand and foot amputated. The penalty for adultery and for homosexuality will be death by stoning. Remember that these standards come from Allah himself through the so-called Prophet Muhammad and are recorded for all time in the Quran. In other words, this is the real Islam, what true and authentic Islam looks like in practice. As the Kingdom of Brunei itself says, these penalties are straight from the, quote, teachings of Islam, end quote. Actor and activist George Clooney has called for a boycott of every luxury hotel owned by Brunei in protest. This makes Clooney the leading Islamophobe in the world since he's condemning authentic Islam. Who knew?
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. On Sunday, Turkish voters handed President Erdogan his first stinging rebuke in the 16 years since he began transforming his country into a Sharia supremacist caliphate. In local elections across the country, opposition candidates ran against Erdogan's economic and political policies, winning key positions, including the mayor's job in Turkey's capital, Ankara, and possibly in Istanbul, its largest city. If not stolen by the regime, these victories offer an opening for a much-needed national course correction. The stakes are high, not least for the United States. For decades, Turkey's been a reliable NATO ally in a dangerous part of the world, but no more. Successive U.S. administrations have ignored, at our peril, Erdogan's embrace of Iran, Russia, China, the Muslim Brotherhood, and its jihadist ilk. Maybe, just maybe, though, Turkey will now begin freeing itself from Erdogan's misrule and fully rejoin our team. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
As a matter of decency and protecting people's privacy rights, people who may be totally innocent, third parties, what must not be released at all? It's grand jury material. It represents statements which may or may not be true by various witnesses, salacious material, all kinds of material that it would be unfair to release.
What a difference a few years should make. That's Gerald Nadler, who's now the head of the Senate the House Judiciary Committee, demanding that William Barr release immediately. He says he's going to release the Mueller report in about 2 weeks, but Nadler and the others on the committee, we must have it now. They set a deadline for today, actually. And they're, you know, busting at the seams to get a hold of all the information, nothing redacted, so that all of it can be released, which you could argue both ways on that. You know that they're going to be innocent people in that report. The president's calling for the release of that report, and so are members of Congress. But the irony here is that Gerald Nadler, when it came to the Ken Starr report on Bill Clinton, felt very differently about it. And that's what he just said. Oh, no, 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 we can't release it. We have to protect people. And speaking of that whole mess, the whole unraveling of the Russian collusion story, I have several things I want to bring to your attention. First of all, I want you to know that people are moving purposely and powerfully to make sure we get the information and that people are held to account. And I just want to give you a few examples of this. Lindsey Graham, as the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, is saying that we are going to call all of the officials who signed that warrant that was the cover to get all of this started, the warrant that went before the FISA court for Carter Page, who obviously did nothing. But he was an excuse. He was used as a pawn. He wants all of the officials who signed that warrant to come before the Senate and testify. That would include former FBI Director James Comey, Rod Rosenstein, Andrew McCabe, former Attorney General Sally Yates. They were all required to sign that warrant. Let them come forward and testify. We want to hear what they have to say. And then, of course, we know that Devin Nunes is sending criminal referrals he is the House Intelligence Ranking Member. Remember, he's Adam Schiff's partner. I would say they are consummate enemies at this point, but they sit right next to each other on that committee. And he is sending a criminal referral next week to the Justice Department detailing multiple referrals on a number of different crimes. He talks about, you know, that Devin Nunes knows everything. He's seen everything. Remember, he's the one that started a lot of this because he saw someone called him over to the one of the wings of the White House and took him into a file and showed him what had been happening. He's the one that went right out from the building and did a press conference and said, some really terrible things have happened, and we're going to expose all of this. And that was the beginning of the revelation that there was purposeful undermining of the president of the United States. We also know, I'm pretty sure, that you can take to the bank that Devin Nunes knows that Barack Obama is up to his ears in this as well. No one seems to be willing to say that right now, but you can trust that it's all tracing back to him. You heard Abe in his commentary during the break. I think I mentioned this yesterday, but if I didn't, I certainly meant to. There are texts now that have been revealed between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. Peter says to Lisa, talking points for Comey, Director Comey, ? And Lisa's text response, yes. But POTUS wants to know everything we're doing. That was Barack Obama, President of the United States. POTUS wants to know everything we're doing. We know that President Obama knew everything and was probably directing much of this. And so with the help of John Brennan, it would appear. In fact, Rand Paul is all over that part. Rand Paul texted a couple of days ago. A high-level source tells me it was John Brennan who insisted that the unverified and fake Steele dossier be included in the intelligence report. Brennan should be asked to testify under oath in Congress ASAP. And I don't have time to even go sidetracking on John Brennan. I've already told you about his communist past. He voted for the communist candidate back in the 80s, and he laughs about it. There's more to say about that. By Diana West went into a great deal on that. Let me commend that. Actually, Adam, why don't you post Diana's interview once again on our Facebook page so that people can easily access it and they can hear some of the background of this. And then there is another investigation. This is a watchdog. Well, we know this group. That watchdog group called Judicial Watch is suing the Office of the Director of National Intelligence to reproduce records of the FBI's response to warnings that a foreign power had compromised then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's email server. Do you remember we played this clip over and over again, and yet I never heard anyone talking about it? When Louis Gohmert was interrogating Peter Strzok, when Peter went before the House Committee, he was so arrogant. We played a lot of that. Remember that, how defiant he was? He's the FBI agent that was going back and forth with Lisa Page that I read just a few minutes ago, talking about POTUS wants to know everything we're doing. So Peter Strzok, before that committee, and Louis Gohmert, in a almost like it's like he said this, and we were like, what? What did he just say? Basically, Louis asked him, or Congressman Gohmert asked him, I got to read his words. He said, he described a meeting in the White House where the Inspector General's staff met with Peter Strzok. He said they informed Strzok of an anomaly they had found on Hillary's emails that were going to a private unauthorized server that you were supposed to be investigating. And Louis goes on to say it was going to an unauthorized source that was a foreign entity unrelated to Russia. Well, it turns out Louis Gohmert, as I knew at the time, was talking about China. And it looks as though Mrs. Clinton's private email server had some sort of software attached to it so that the Chinese government, Chinese entities connected with the Chinese government, were reading every single thing that came to Mrs. Clinton and all the responses. And that means President Obama's information with her, all the high security ambassadors, people, you know, undercover people, everyone that might have emailed the Secretary of State at the time the Chinese had access to. Peter Strzok claimed he didn't remember that. He didn't quite remember that. So now Judicial Watch is suing for all the records the FBI has about that meeting with Peter Strzok and what happened to that. So I just wanted you to know that accountability is in the process. There's more to say about that. Of course there is, and there will be from the days to come, and you know I'm going to come back to that. But I want to jump to something else. We know that a woman has accused former Vice President Joe Biden of, basically, let's just listen to Lucy Flores as she tells the story. Here it is.
Joe Biden was behind me. I'm kind of preparing myself to give these remarks. It's the very last days before the election. And very unexpectedly and out of nowhere, I feel Joe Biden put his hands on my shoulders, get up very close to me from behind, lean in, smell my hair, and then plant a slow kiss on the top of my head.
Now that was, we talked about that yesterday, and I told you my opinion about it, and I don't know that I need to repeat it. You have to know, if this were an isolated incident, you might say, well, that doesn't seem like much. But if you want to see more, you can Google Joe Biden and women, and you can see lots of videos, actual video of Biden touching and smelling women's hair and coming up behind them. It's a pattern that he has. It is creepy. I have to say, it's creepy. It may fall short of a sexual attack of some kind, but it is very creepy. You can see the picture of him coming up behind Secretary of State Ash Carter, or Secretary of State, no, Defense Secretary Ash Carter, when he was giving his speech, Joe Biden comes up behind his wife, and it's a creepy photo. And so now another woman has come forth to talk about her story. But actually, I don't want to talk about that part. I think there's reason to be concerned about that, even though I want to repeat again, I'm generally a skeptic on this Me Too thing. I really am. I just think it's too easy to accuse over nothing. I think men have been put in tremendous danger by this, but that doesn't mean there isn't real cause for alarm with some men. The problem with accusing everybody of everything is that the real problems get lost in the shuffle. But I don't want to talk about that in this moment. I want to talk to you about something else. Joe Biden is first in the lineup of Democratic candidates. He has the most percentage points, the most popularity of anyone so far. But the truth about Joe Biden has never really been told. And I think that once he was selected by President Obama to be his vice president, people just kind of held their powder. I told you about what I heard from the Secret Service agents, female, that guarded him, who said he would swim in the mansion. They had a pool, and he would swim nude. And even though they asked him please not to do that in their presence, he did it anyway. I think that's weird. But you've never heard that before, probably, except from me. But here are other things. The problem is that Joe Biden has made some tremendous errors of judgment. I mean, that's the kindest thing I can think about. You might remember that former Defense Secretary Bob Gates wrote a book, and he says that Joe Biden was wrong on nearly every major foreign policy and national security issue over the past four decades. Gates, in his book, Duty, Memoirs of a Secretary of War, at War, Gates explained how Biden played a big role in the hasty and complete withdrawal from Iraq, which, of course, created the chaos in Syria, which, of course, was the onset of ISIS. And I'm going to have to speed read through that because I want to get, I really, really want to get to this next part because I had forgotten about this story. And someone sent it to me this morning and it just refreshed my memory amazingly. This is the story. This is in The Hill. 2 years after leaving office, Joe Biden couldn't resist the temptation last year to brag to an audience of foreign policy specialists about the time as vice president that he strong-armed Ukraine into firing its top prosecutor. In his own words, with video cameras rolling, Biden described how he threatened Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko in March 2016 that the Obama administration would pull $1 billion in U.S. loan guarantees, sending the former Soviet republic toward insolvency, if it didn't immediately fire Prosecutor General Viktor Shokin. I said, this is Joe Biden speaking, you're not getting the billion. I'm going to be leaving here in, I think it was about 6 hours. I looked at them and said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money, Biden recalled telling Poroshenko. Well, blank of a blank, he got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid at the time. That's what he told the Council of Foreign Relations at an event and insisted that President Obama was in on the threat. Interviews with a half dozen senior Ukrainian officials confirmed Biden's account, though they claim the pressure was applied over several months in late 2015 and early 2016, not just 6 hours of one dramatic day. Whatever the case, Poroshenko and Ukraine's parliament obliged by ending Shokin's tenure as prosecutor. Shokin was facing steep criticism in Ukraine for not bringing enough corruption prosecutions when he was fired. But Ukrainian officials tell me, this is John Solomon writing in The Hill, but Ukrainian officials tell me there was one crucial piece of information that Biden must have known but didn't mention to his audience. The prosecutor he got fired was leading a wide-ranging corruption probe into the natural gas firm Burisma Holdings that employed Biden's younger son Hunter as a board member. U.S. banking records show Hunter Biden's American-based firm Rosemont Seneca Partners received regular transfers into one of its accounts, usually more than $166,000 a month, from spring of 2014 to fall of 2015, the period when Vice President Biden was the main U.S. official dealing with Ukraine. The General Prosecutor's Office file for the Burisma probe, shared with John Solomon by senior Ukrainian officials, shows prosecutors identified Hunter Biden, business partner Devin Archer, and their firm as potential recipients of the money. The timing of Hunter Biden's and Archer's appointment to Burisma's board has been highlighted in the past. The New York Times highlighted it in December 2015 and in a book in 2016 by author Peter Schweitzer. His appointment was made during his dad's tenure overlooking Ukraine when Obama was president. Obama named Biden to be the administration's point man on Ukraine in February 2014, and Hunter was appointed not long after that. So you see, this is the dangerous part of it. We can talk about the women part, that's disgusting, but there are other things about Joe Biden that you've never heard because he was like Uncle Joe, right? We're going to put this article from The Hill on our Facebook page so that you can read and share it. It'll give you something to talk about and share with your friends. Because I think we have to know the truth, don't we? We just have to. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.